Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by the Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit www.brooklynslate.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi. I'm the co-host. Mary will not be joining us tonight. She's off on a business expedition. But I'm joined in the studio by my good friends, Nick Ladd.
Hello.
How you doing, Nick Ladd?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Chris?
Fantastic. And Chris Pagnotta.
What's up?
From the New York City Home Brewers Guild. We are a podcast on all things fermentable and air every Monday night at 7 p.m. But you can also catch us archived on iTunes and also at heritageradionetwork.org. Before we dive into today's show, there are a couple announcements I want to make. Mary and I are hosting a chocolate fermentation competition called Choctoberfest on October 26th. And if you'd like to join, find out more information about that on fermentaboutit.com. But also, the New York City Home Brewers Guild, my constituents here, we are celebrating our 25th year anniversary as a guild and a homebrew club in New York City. We'll be joined by Garrett Oliver, who is one of the founding members, on November 2nd, having a giant homebrew party, kind of functioning like club night from the NHC, but for local New York City clubs. It's going to be awesome. Check nychomebrew.com for more information. More information will be posted soon on that. And today's subject is pumpkin. Pumpkin beer. We're going to talk all things pumpkin, and we have on the phone right now our good friend Dick Cantwell of Elysian Brewing. Dick, are you on the line?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I'm very, very, very excited to have you with us today. It is 3 days, 20 hours, 57 minutes, and 55 seconds until the 9th annual Great Pumpkin Beer Festival. What is the Great Pumpkin Beer Festival?
Yeah, and we're going to need every minute of that to get it ready in time.
I bet.
It's a pumpkin beer festival that we started doing, well, obviously 9 years ago. The first year we did it, we poured six different pumpkin beers of ours, which we thought was hilarious and just not to be outdone, and invited six of our local friends and cajoled them into brewing some pumpkin beers, and we had a dozen beers at our first festival. It's gotten bigger every year. We had it at our Capitol Hill pub location for the first 5 or 6 years, and we had to move it to the parking lot of our production facility because now we get... Oh, I think we'll have about 4,000 people there on Saturday and probably a little bit less than that on Friday and Sunday. But now we're pouring, I think this year we're scheduled to pour 83 different pumpkin beers, 22 of which we had a hand in.
Wow. So that's why I'm very excited to have you on today to talk about pumpkin beers and brewing of them. I was fortunate enough to see your talk at the CBC a couple years back. Was that Chicago when you did a pumpkin seminar?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I've given a bunch of different talks about pumpkin beers. I don't think I've ever given an entirely pumpkin talk. I've talked about brewing with unusual ingredients, and pumpkin, of course, figures into that.
Right.
But anyway, yeah.
So what led you to the pumpkin thing with all the unusual ingredients? You do a lot of unusual ingredients. Actually, Nick Ladd used to live a couple blocks away from your pub out there, right?
Hi, Dick. I used to live on Capitol Hill, probably, you know, half a mile from your pub there. It's great.
Uh-huh.
Awesome
great.
Place.
Yeah.
Spent many an evening drinking hoppy beers and pumpkin beers and everything in between. But
one of the reasons I invited Nick and Chris to join me today, at 5:08, I've started a line where I'm doing collaborations with different homebrew clubs in the area, and we're brewing and doing it on a different... Each month, we're featuring a different homebrew club. And the last to brew was with them, and we did a pumpkin beer. We did a pumpkin saison, and to you, what makes a pumpkin beer?
Well, I do think it's very important. Well, first of all, it might sound obvious, but it's got to have pumpkin in it to begin with. You know, there are a surprising number of very highly successful and, you know, sales-worthy so-called pumpkin beers that don't have any pumpkin at all in them. Some of the biggest pumpkin brands, in fact, don't. They just spice it and call it good because it sort of alludes to pumpkin. But I'll set that aside for the moment. I do think, you know, any beer that boasts having a particular ingredient needs to show that ingredient. You can't just hide it away and have it be sort of just a conceptual touch. I think you have to pick it up. And pumpkin's a bit of a challenge there because pumpkin doesn't have a lot of flavor. It's more of a mouthfeel thing. It's a little bit of astringency. It's just the way it feels. And I think that's one reason that when people cook with pumpkin, it's very often spiced. You know, it makes its way into cuisines that use a lot of spices, Indian food, Mexican food. And, you know, when people make pie, of course, they spice it. Most pumpkin beers do have some kind of spice. And I think that's often viewed as necessary because it mitigates some of that quality of the pumpkin, that astringency. We don't actually spice all of ours, but I do think I try to have some other flavoring ingredient in there. By that, I mean maybe it'll be a wild yeast or, you know, some sort of sourness that's imparted with it that will balance with the pumpkin in that way. We've made German-style pumpkin Hefeweizens, although, you know, that's the dichotomy right there. You would never see pumpkin in any German-style anything in Germany, of course. But, you know, in that case, the sort of banana and clove with the yeast provides the counterpoint to the pumpkin. So I think it has to show some pumpkin in its feel and flavor. And then because it has that, it invites certain treatments. Sometimes it's done just straight up pumpkin without spices, like the pumpkin malt liquor we did with called PK47, which is a riff on our regular malt liquor, which we brew rarely, AK47.
Nice.
But in that case, the mitigating factor was the yellow number 6 food coloring I used to turn it, you know, bright orange. Yeah. So, I don't know, it's an interesting game. We manage to come up with new things every year, and there are some we bring back every year, and at this point we've got a stable, probably, of 35 different pumpkin beers that we've brewed over the years.
That's incredible, yeah. Going back to the color thing, have you ever tried any other things for color to allude to the pumpkin color?
Well, not really. I mean, most pumpkin beer is kind of pumpkin colored, you know, just because it's evocative that way. You know, whenever I use any unusual ingredient that is likely to impart color, I'll generally back off on the colored malt so that it can come forward if it has a mind to. You know, many things that you use don't really give a whole lot of color. The way I lit on that yellow number 6 was I did a posting in the BA forum asking for suggestions about coloration, you know, and I started it with something like many of you, I'm contemplating brewing my pumpkin malt liquor now, and I'd like a little help on coming up with something to color it. I got some interesting suggestions, you know, annatto, saffron, I forget what else. But then I got an offline response from somebody who suggested that I use food coloring. And, you know, that was the funniest one because I said I wanted it to look like Orange Crush.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what we actually wanted, the same thing with our Saison, and our base grains were very, very pale. And I suggested we try carrots. Have you ever brewed with carrots?
No, I haven't. But somebody suggested that, too.
Yeah. We ended up, so I got these raw organic carrots and I tasted them. The idea was we were going to juice it and throw it in after primary fermentation to make sure the color is there and maybe even get it to maybe some of that carrot sweetness to kind of dance with the pumpkin. But the carrots were too good. They tasted like dirt. I mean, they were awesome carrots. They were like, but they were nothing I wanted to add to this beer. So I ended up actually cooking them, roasting them down and kind of caramelizing them a bit. And it brought a yellow color, but that wasn't probably nothing like the food coloring.
Did it help the flavor? That sounds pretty interesting.
Yes, actually, I think so. I mean, the guys to the right and left of me, Chris and Nick, haven't tasted it yet. I brought it with me. We haven't carved it yet, and we haven't decided whether to add spices yet, kind of based on our show tonight. We'll figure out what we want to do there and what we can learn from you.
Well, sure. Probably the silliest beer we've got pouring this year, since we're talking about other vegetables, is our Great Gherkin Pumpkin Ale, which is a cucumber pumpkin ale with dill. And it tastes like a pickle.
A pickled pumpkin. Peter Piper picked a pickle pumpkin pumpkins.
Yeah, it was a beer we brewed several years ago, and I thought we'd never do it again. But the very first person who came in the following year asked where it was and when were we going to brew it again. So we brought it back this year.
Wow! What are some of the other 22 that you have?
Well, we've got 15 just straight up of our own, and seven others are collaborative beers that we did with people. We've got the two collaborative beers that I did with 21st Amendment this year, which are really delicious. They're both called He Said. One is a Belgian style triple with pumpkin, galangal and tarragon, and the other one is a Baltic porter with pumpkin, cinnamon and caraway.
Oh wow!
We've also got we have some of our standards like the Hansel and Gretel ginger pumpkin pilsner and the Dark of the Moon pumpkin stout that has just cinnamon. We've got a couple of sours. Our regular sort of more complex sour beer is called Mr. Yuck, after that poison control guy who's sticking his tongue out.
Awesome.
And then we have 100% Brettanomyces pumpkin beer that's called Headless Horsey. We've got the Curvatinus pumpkin Dunkel Hefeweizen Bock. Let's see, what else?
Dunkelweizenbock?
We did a coffee, yeah, pumpkin Dunkel Hefeweizenbock. I've got to say that a couple of times.
Nice.
We've got Punkuccino coffee pumpkin ale, and that's actually the beer that we're going to be putting in the hollowed out pumpkins that we, you know, condition beer in every year.
Yes.
And then tap partway through the ceremonies at the Pumpkin Fest. And I got to tell you about the pumpkin way off, but right now I'm running through the array. You were talking about a saison. We also have a pumpkin saison with lavender.
Nice.
In it. That's also a comeback from a few years ago.
Is that the only spice that you
use? We did a plum pumpkin ale called Plumpkin. and then we've got our flagship pumpkin beer, of course, Night Owl, that started the whole thing. And we've got another Mexican-themed one called Calatrava that's got habanero and vanilla in it, and aged on epazote.
What is epazote?
Epazote is a Mexican, it's an herb that's used in Mexican cooking. If you look at, you know, sort of a more authentic Mexican cookbook like Rick Bayless or something like that, the recipes will often call for epazote. It's not always easy to get. I've found it dried in some of the Latin markets here in Seattle. But, we got this fresh from one of our local celebrity chefs out here, Tom Douglas, has a farm near Prosser, Washington, and we got 100% of this year's epazote production to put into this beer. It's kind of oregano-like, a little bit that way, kind of resinous and fragrant.
Mm-hmm. That sounds a lot of fun, like a lot of fun. And the other beers that are coming, so you have 82 in total. How many different breweries are represented this year?
I think it's about 70. Because we do get multiple beers from some places. We're going to have 5 beers from Cambridge Brewing Company because they have a festival as well, and we do a lot of swapping back and forth with them, with Will. And then we've got a couple from Iron Hill. They also do a festival. And then there are people who just sort of, you know, take on the challenge themselves and send us whatever.
Yep. I wanted to do that with the local homebrewers last year and do that in October, and I tried to begin to do it this year, but I have all these other things that I've kind of found myself involved in. But I'd love to do a pumpkin festival here in particular, and I'd like to get into it in the next segment about just what to do and how to condition and serve beers through a pumpkin, or your method of doing it. We're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be back in a minute on Ferment About It.
Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com.
Welcome back to Fomentin' About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here in the studio with my friends from the New York City Home Brewers Guild, Chris Pagnotta and Nick Ladd, and on the phone with Dick Cantwell of Legion Brewing Company. Thanks again, Dick, for joining us. In the first session, we were talking we were talking all pumpkin beers, and Nick and Chris made a beer with me at 508, and I just poured them a taste for the very first time of the beer. It's fermented out. We have not carbonated it yet. It is a nice saison. The pumpkin has come out. What are your first impressions on this beer?
I think it came out really nicely. As we were talking before, I'm a little hesitant to say that it's like at a super amount of pumpkin, and it's
right.
A little bit nervous that it's going to be on the board at 508. People are going to see, oh, they've got a pumpkin beer, and they're going to order it and expect the typical cinnamon, nutmeg,
right.
Clove, allspice kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get like spice, but I get yeast spice. I don't get right. You know, cinnamon, you know, that kind of typical pie spice.
So, Dick, we're looking to emote some pumpkin in this. Do you have any recommendations?
You're looking to what? Some pumpkin.
To emote just pumpkin. And
so you've got no spice in it yet. Right?
No, and so So I like to do a lot. So that was another question I was going to have for you. How do you deal with most of your spices? Do you do last minute of the boil? I've been doing a lot of tinctures at the end and kind of spicing after the fact for a lot of control, kind of in the way that I do I've done it with success as a home brewer.
Yeah, we've kind of done it always. I mean, we usually do some addition in the whirlpool. And sometimes we need to jazz it up a little bit, like our Dark in the Moon Pumpkin Stout has just cinnamon. So some of that goes into the whirlpool, and then we just sort of brighten it up by adding some just directly to the fermenter,
mm-hmm.
Usually after fermentation is concluded. And we use this really good Vietnamese cinnamon that's very fiery and tasty. But you pretty much respond. I mean, that what you were saying about the saison yeast, supplying some of the spiciness, that's exactly what I would do with something like that. We've got this saison this year with some lavender, so you might not need it. One thing I also like to do sometimes is when I'm coming out with something new, you know, like these 21st Amendment beers we did, we've got, you know, tarragon and galangal, so that the galangal is a play on ginger, you know, because it's Thai ginger, so it's sort of expectable that it's got a little twist to it, and then the Baltic Porter with the cinnamon caraway. Obviously, cinnamon is very familiar in pumpkin-type things, but the caraway is not. So I like to sort of escort something unexpected with something that people are familiar with.
Right.
You know, not in that kind of spicing. I know one thing I like this year is New Belgium came out with a new pumpkin beer called Pumpkick, and it echoes some of the collaborative pumpkin beer that I did with New Belgium a couple of years ago. It has cranberry like that one did. That was a sour beer. This one isn't sour, but it's tart with the cranberry. And it's got some regular sort of pumpkin pie spice things in it, like allspice and clove, but it's also got lemongrass.
Uh-huh.
So once again, you know, the unfamiliar is escorted by the familiar. And I think it makes for a really interesting counterpoint. You get people sort of standing there wondering what they're tasting and picking it apart that way.
I love that. Yeah, like they're holding hands and being escorted in. It's really
nice.
And then to that regard, so how do you condition a pumpkin? So it's pumpkin season out here. We're just getting pumpkins into the markets. How do you condition a pumpkin to serve it well, to serve a beer through it?
Well, we've been doing this since the very first pumpkin fest that we did. It was just an idea I had about using a pumpkin as though it were, you know, like a keg or a firkin. Mm-hmm. And we did a secondary fermentation in the pumpkin. And what we would do is take unfermented beer, prime it, spice it. You know, we would usually drive some cinnamon sticks into the inside of the pumpkin. And we'd seal it up with wax. And then, you know, a couple of days later, after it had its chance to condition, we would tap it and pour it. Well, a pumpkin is a porous membrane, so carbonation is an issue. It's really hard to keep any carbonation in a pumpkin-conditioned beer. And so we try to do it really young, so that ideally, maybe it got a little bit of spritz still going with the secondary fermentation going. And, you know, we'll get a few bubbles in there, not too much. But I would say that the key thing that we do when we do these pumpkin beers in the pumpkin is that we burn the inside. I think that was the biggest step forward we took to having the beer really taste good. We were talking before about the astringency that pumpkin just naturally has. And so I got the idea to use a torch and burn the inside like the inside of a barrel to put a good strong char on it. And what that does is it cooks the pumpkin a little bit so it tastes better. You know, it caramelizes some of the sugars that are in the pumpkin. It also makes a slick inner surface that I think maybe is a little more resistant to the pumpkin soaking through, though we've never really had that problem. And it just gives a bit of a burnt flavor to it, too. So I think that's the most important thing. We always seal it up with beeswax, and I think the beeswax is important as well, because we used paraffin the first couple of years, and paraffin cracks. So as the pumpkin is conditioning, just sort of naturally changing its shape a bit, because, of course, what it wants to do is decompose at that point, but so the lid would settle in and crack the wax, but with beeswax, it's much more resilient, you know, because it's got all that, you know, sort of honey material and, right, you know, royal jelly and bee legs and stuff that keeps it from being very brittle. So that's key.
Do you seal it with the beeswax or just you coat the entire thing with the beeswax?
Not the whole thing, but we seal up when we put the lid back We seal it up with that. Although, you know, we're fairly liberal with the beeswax.
Gotcha.
It looks pretty neat, dripping down all over the outside. And then, of course, every year we put the requisite number of candles on the pumpkin. This year it'll have 9 candles.
Nice. And also, how many days would you recommend conditioning it, and what temperature?
I think ideally a day and a half to 2 days once it's put in there and primed, just to try to retain some of that spritz. You don't want it to get too old.
Yeah.
And we condition it just at ambient temperature, and then the day before we're going to tap it, we put it in the cold room just to put a little bit of a chill on it. This year, for the first time, we got our pumpkins. We picked out our pumpkins yesterday at a big pumpkin way off, about an hour from Seattle. We are going to have 3 pumpkins that average about 750 pounds each. Full of beer that we're going to be tapping this weekend. And they're just gorgeous. One of them is bright white. One of them has this sort of pinky blush over it. But it was really fun to go out there and watch people get really psyched about whose pumpkin was going to get, not just win the competition, but get filled with beer. We didn't get the winner. That's going on display. They totally put that out to stud. But we got 6 pumpkins that were pretty darn big.
That's awesome. So, and then circling back to pumpkin beer should have pumpkin. What kind of pumpkins do you use? Or do you substitute out with other squash? In our case, we supplemented ours with various squashes.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I think it's really interesting when people fool around with different varieties. We make so much pumpkin beer. I mean, for our size, I mean, you know, we make probably 3,500 to 4,000 barrels of pumpkin beer every year. This year we bought 38,000 pounds of pumpkin.
Wow.
At that size, we can't, just do the roasting and all that stuff. And we would spend our whole lives doing that. And also these days, if you have a production-level pumpkin beer, you've got to, I mean, sad to say, but you've got to have samples to share with people in stores and stuff by July.
Right.
So obviously you're using the previous year's harvest of pumpkin. But we do use really good pumpkin. I contract every year with an organic farm down in Oregon, and we get 30-pound buckets of blanched, pureed, frozen pumpkin that is pretty easy to work with. And it's just, usually we use a variety called Golden Delicious. We've tried a couple of other varieties that they have, but that's the one I like the most.
Now, it seems like there's a lot of debate about where to put the pumpkin. People put it in the mash, the boil. Some people put it in the secondary fermenters. I thought I read online that maybe you put it, you know, in 3 different steps along the process.
We do. We do. We put some in the mash. For our regular pumpkin beer, the proportions are, let's see, like 2-to-1. For a 20-barrel batch, we would put 60 pounds of pumpkin in the mash, and we would put 60 more pounds in the boil to get some caramelization action, and then we would put another 30 in the fermenter, you know, thinned out with wort so that it doesn't lower the gravity too much. And then that ferments out. And you don't see any residual pumpkin when the fermentation is done. It loves to ferment.
That's awesome.
So you're actually seeing extract available, and it's bumping up the alcohol percentage.
Well, I'm not sure that it does. It's mainly because pumpkin has so much water in it. So when you use pumpkin in a beer, it's going to lower your starting gravity, not raise it. So it's going to contribute some sugars, but it's also going to contribute some water. So you have to keep in mind, if you're trying to hit a target gravity, that the pumpkin itself is going to lower that. And that's actually one fact that caused us to have our first pumpkin fest. I was trying to brew a batch of our imperial pumpkin ale. We brewed the first imperial pumpkin ale anywhere, and I didn't hit my gravity because the pumpkin, I'd kind of forgotten to take the pumpkin into account. So right there I had two beers, and I knew I was going to have to brew another one, so that was three. And then with three more, we had our six, and we were off to the races with the fest.
That's an awesome start. That's great. Spices, you said you use them in the end, you use them in the beginning, but the tinctures are like in the end. You said sometimes you just throw them just straight into the secondary fermenter after fermentation. Do you ever make tinctures or teas and things with that? I mean, you do a lot of spice work at Elysian, and you must go through a lot of different things.
Yeah, I have. I guess I most often just throw it in. I mean, that's not counting things like the coffee infusions that we've done in separate tanks and then pumped in. Spice mixtures like peppers, like last year we made the last 2 years we made another Mexican themed one called Coche de Medianoche that had five different kinds of chilies in it. So we did do infusions with those, steep them and combine them with hot water so that we could deal with them more easily and try to introduce them more uniformly rather than just throwing in the vast quantities of powder that would probably just clump. So I think that is advisable to at least put them in water.
Right. Do you ever have any issues with the water, with any dissolved oxygen or introducing that late stage?
Yeah, that's certainly a consideration, both dissolved oxygen and the possibility of contamination. That is a factor. We've tested some of our spices. Of the five main ones that we use, all spice is really the one that's sort of the more dangerous one, because if you think about it, it's a berry. It's less dried than other stuff. So that actually is something that we usually put in on the hot side because we have gotten some bacteria readings from it, so we try to be careful of that. But you're right, you have to be careful of that. The dissolved oxygen in water is something. At our production brewery, we can deaerate water, so that's not a problem, but it is something that you have to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, we're almost out of time. Dick, thank you so much for joining us, man. This is awesome.
Hey, can I say one more thing? I'm going to be in New York the week after GABF. And one thing we're going to be doing is we're going to do this sort of pumpkin patch thing. There are going to be clusters of bars around the city. I think two clusters in Brooklyn. I think there's a Park Slope one and a Williamsburg one, and three in Manhattan and one in Queens. We're going to have clusters of six bars, each of which is going to be pouring a different pumpkin beer, and then there's going to be a central bar in each cluster that's going to have like six of them pouring. So there's going to be an opportunity to taste some of our beers and have some fun. It's sort of a scavenger hunt kind of thing.
That's awesome. Where's more information on that?
Let's see. I'll have to get that. It'll definitely be on our website, elysianbrewing.com. We'll have more information as that gets closer.
And I'll announce it next week, and I'll keep everybody abreast for any listeners that are here in New York. And if you're on the West Coast, you got 3 days, 20 hours, 30 minutes, 57 seconds, 55 now, till the festival. And that's really exciting. Get your tickets at elysianbrewing.com. Dick, thank you. We'll see you in New York, man. I'm excited to see you out here. And I'm excited to share this
Thanks
beer with you.
Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Foment About It. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thank you. thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.